Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. He was born ready, he is ready, and he is Mr. Rick Vanover. How's it going, Rick?
I got my new toy.
Whoa!
I'm on air.
Where are we going? Full screen?
There you go. No one's here to see it, but I got a nice little LED light.
Hold on. Bring that back. So explain this to me. So is this like an actual LED board? It almost kind of looks like a reverse light bright system.
Yeah, you could say it. See?
Oh, yeah.
It's got an illumination situation to it. Yes.
That is. Now, you need to ring it up so you have like a giant red button on your desk. You smack the button. It's on air outside the door. And then you smack it when it's off. Like that's.
I could do something fancy like that. But, you know, it was a gift from my wife. And I actually put it on a phone holder. You know, like the way you stand up the phone. And it's just when I'm live, I plug it in. And I could probably power shell it, get a smart.
I was gonna say, you could over engineer this thing to the high heavens.
Maybe like a moodometer, depending on my mood.
For people who are listening to the audio portion, which I know is the majority of people, it's an on air sign. If I can't remember if we made it clear enough, but that's what it is. So
it's nice. It's fun. It's cute.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I've thought about wiring one up on the outside of this door, but realistically, what I need is one that attaches to my daughter's wrist. And says, please don't drop anything on the wood floors because it's really loud downstairs. Would you do that?
So, the world's largest drum.
Yeah.
Tile is worse, maybe.
And she has a very good habit. And I don't. This isn't necessarily her fault. But she has a very good habit of dropping the Apple TV remotes, which are already like little laser beams and slippery. And those things, when they hit the wood floor, they make a nice little punch noise.
Quarters are loud too on tile.
Yeah, let's not give her any ideas. But Rick, a lot has happened since we've talked last. We had the Microsoft Spring Ignite Veeam officially launch some software, and you've written a post, all of which are worth talking. But the first thing, actually, Aiden Finn wrote an editorial for us, so I'll be curious to see on your thoughts. So when we published all the news for Ignite, there was a ton of news, but the most popular post on thepetri.com by a factor of at least two or three was Windows Server 2022 announcement. I would have lost that bet in Vegas about what was the most popular, but it was massive. It blew up very clearly a demographic for it. And Aiden saw my tweet about it and he wrote me an editorial and says, hey, you know, the cloud is great, but Windows Server, like, it's not going away anytime soon. So I'd be curious on your thoughts, if you have any up there in Columbus.
Yeah, for sure. So there is definitely a market palette for the hybrid experience. There is definitely a market palette for, you know, that long-term servicing channel, the LTSC of the Windows. And, you know, the same thing goes for SQL Server, right? There's a lot of interest there, but, you know, that's a different conversation, right? But, you know, as much as I like Azure, you know, that's my MVP category, right? But I really like the fact that, you know, Windows Server is going to continue to be released. And same thing with the semi-annual channel, but the long-term servicing channel, that's where the bulk of the market is. You know, more Devi people will go into the semi-annual channel. But, yeah, you know, I look at the 2022, can't wait to get my hands on it. I haven't done it yet with any of the previews or whatever. I'm actually being a bad MVP right now because I'm missing some of MVP Summit. To have this call.
This is an important one. This is way more important than insider knowledge about the future of Microsoft products.
Yeah, so I'm not surprised about the interest there. I know that, like, as an ISV here at Veeam, we take that seriously as well. So, and you know, the thing is, this also applies in Azure, and that's the thing. Yeah, Azure's very important. So the M365 suite of services and apps, but, you know, Windows Server 22 has an Azure story too. So it's not like it's completely disconnected, right? So, you know, I have to read up on what it has in it. I mean, I doubt there's any super amazing new things other than probably, you know, an opportunity to, you know, do Azure stuff more natively. But yeah, so I mean, it's not an island away from Azure. I think it's just another island within the world of Azure.
Yeah, and the other important thing to note about this stuff, while it has been announced, it's honestly probably, there's going to be a significant amount of length of time before anybody seriously adopts this other than maybe Microsoft, at wide scale for their organization. These adoption cycles of the server platforms, I can tell you very clearly based on the traffic to our server post over on Petri, don't cater towards the new stuff until I would say like 18 months after launch is when we start to see like that resurgence of people looking at our help content or tutorial content for server related products. So,
yeah, and just creeping, you know, the top three, right?
It's
more security, hybrid Azure capabilities, I called it, and, you know, application container stuff, right? So it's walking that modernized way. And, you know, presumably my real question is what stops, what is dropped, what goes away?
Yeah, right? Good point.
You know, I doubt you'll see something, in my opinion, drastic like Hyper-V stop being offered.
Oh, that, yeah.
You know, Azure Stack HCI, actually, in my opinion, is going to give a new life, a renaissance revival to Hyper-V, right? You know, could be. So, you know,
that might just be a title, by the way.
The renaissance revival of Hyper-V in 2021 and 2022. So, yeah, I mean, and then the other bit is like supporting large scale 64 sockets. Whoa. You know, so like there's, you know, some big stuff going on. So, yeah, I'm not surprised at the interest there. You know, Linux is still doing good, too. But, you know, everything goes up. Right. It's not like anything goes away. Everything just there's more of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty fair way to put it. And especially I'll be curious to see if any of our listeners have any feedback about Server 2022 or more specifically, if you're planning on deploying it. Because as some server products typically go away, you've got to upgrade somehow, and it looks like this will be a candidate probably for maybe was it Server 2016? I'm trying to think of what the next one that goes away is.
2012 R2.
That's I don't know.
Final call.
Yeah.
You know? And you can play with Server 22, Windows Server 2022 in Azure today. You can do the preview now, so you can have it in your hands. You know, but 2012 if. Funny, I just did something last week down in your neck of the woods, and he's running 2012 R2, and he got totally lambasted on YouTube for that old OS, but that's okay.
It is old. One might even say it's about 10 years old.
It's about time to go.
Yeah.
It's not even R2.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, I guess it's better than 2008.
I'm surprised it worked, actually, for what we were doing with it. So...
Other big things that have happened, Veeam V11 officially out the door. Anybody can go get this now, correct?
Correct. It's GA, and we've already had our first kind of post-GA patch, right? Some of the corner cases that we found already been incorporated. Yeah, it's been a huge release. Five things real quick. You know, continuous data protection for VMware environments. Hardened Linux repository for immutable backups to help beat ransomware, no additional cost. In addition to what we're doing all the other ways, it's yet another way to beat ransomware. Expanded instant recovery with like SQL Server databases instantly recovered, pretty cool. And supporting the archive storages in the cloud, so Azure Archive, and then AWS Glacier and Deep Glacier Deep Archive. And then the fifth bit is consuming more stuff from Veeam as a service, and a little secret. Now there's a Mac OS agent.
Ooh.
Yeah, new product snuck in there underneath it all. Yep. Yeah.
So, Rick, I have an official pitch. Now, you're going to have to run this up the flagpole. You'll see where I'm going here. When you launch the next version of this software, I personally think you should get a V12 Lamborghini and just emblazon Veeam right on the side.
Do not tell that to our... you know, co-founders, they will love that idea, right? No, we've had, actually, we had a Tesla mocked up. Yeah, for a while in one of the liveries, the whatever. But I've never been a big fan of the flamboyant, wait, look at my office, no.
I was going to say, Rick.
Well, I keep it, I just, you know, I'm recycling this stuff. They're going to.
Yeah, there you go. You're keeping it out of the landfill.
You know, I'm a simple guy, right? I make my own soup. That's what I had for lunch today, right? So I got to keep my life simple. I don't want a fancy car. I actually one time, true story, Brad. So, you know, you've been to a couple of the VMOD events before. And we're scheming that now, an online event this year. Last one, because next year we're back in Vegas.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah, that's the hope. Fingers crossed.
We should be.
We should be.
Should be or at least voluntary. I mean, I think we'll have a hybrid element that might stick. But a couple years ago, I think it might have been VeeamON. I don't know. But I do a lot of work for the team who organizes it internally. Mm-hmm. So I help them out, like with the agenda and all that stuff. A funny story. This is true as well. They're very good. They're not technical people. They're events people, right? But I basically serve as an agenda manager for like parts of the event. And we went to, I guess it was Las Vegas. I guess it was Aria or Cosmopolitan. I don't know, fancy place. And they gave me a nice room, like not like our co-founder nice room, like the one with the butler and the know all that. We didn't get that room. But it was a nice room. And I even told them, I think I got them on a group chat. I'm like, this is too fancy. Too fancy. Too fancy.
Well, if you ever find yourself in too fancy of a hotel room and want to swap with my Holiday Inn Express or wherever I'm staying at the current moment, we'll happily.
I'll take you up for it. I'm a simple guy.
We are all looking forward to in-person events again.
I have some coming up, actually.
Do you?
Yes, I do. I have one in May in Northern Ohio, Sandusky, and it's going to be a hybrid event. So I think that's going to stick. It's very focused to the K through 12 education space, and I'm going to be presenting my Azure security, storage and security best practices talk. And then I'm scheming some SharePoint events in Chicago in the
SharePoint.
Summer.
All right.
Yep. And then Chicago, Dallas, and DC, the SharePoint Fest, I think it's called. So these groups are planning a different experience, and I'm supportive of these. I'm very progressive to get back into this.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it comes down to I desperately, you know, strive for that authentic human interaction.
Yeah.
Right? And one thing, I mean, I just listen to people better and, you know, I take it in better. I have just trouble concentrating on virtual events, and, and it's almost harder. It sounds crazy. It's almost harder to attend a virtual event at home. I don't know how the MVP Summit is a challenge I have. It's like, oh, I got all this other stuff still going on. But if I pick myself up and extract myself into a new platform or environment, I feel like I can clear the schedule and arrange it a little bit better. And maybe I just have no self-control. I don't know. It's one of the two.
A little bit of A, a little bit of B. We're not going to judge.
Well, I think that's it. A little bit of both, for sure.
We all just miss that out-of-session conversations, I think, is the side conversations. The, well, what did you take away? Or did you hear this? Or type mentality. So,
well, it's just the camaraderie of it all, right? And, like, it's just that's – and I think there's actually a deep psychological element to it as well, because – I'm looking very specifically at, like, you know, if I hire a new person on my team, like, how do you bring someone up in this environment? If you have an established group that's well-oiled and working well together, that's different. But like the net new or the departures and things, how do you manage that? That's harder. So I'm concerned about that. And then I'm also thinking around community sides, right? People, you know, maybe aren't innovating enough in their own network, right? So it's like, I think that's important. But in backup terms, I'll just say you can't always take a synthetic full backup. You got to take an active full backup sometimes. So you almost have to have this authentic part that you base everything on. And take MVP Summit. Like right here is my badge from the last MVP Summit. And, you know, like the side chats are the best. And we just, it's different. I don't put that on Teams and stuff, you know. That's what I miss.
You know what feature Veeam V12 should incorporate?
Oh, boy.
Tab, backup, and recovery for your browser. While you have Control-Shift-T, there are times where I've accidentally closed a browser and you see all that go away and you're like, oh, no.
You know, I've switched over to Bing. Or Bing is my search and Edge is my browser.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reopen close tab, it's built right in, Chief. Look at that.
But it's when I close all the tabs and they go away, and then I have a moment of silence about all the stories that I meant to read.
Well, at least you didn't stack the tabs on the left. That messed me up big time.
Yeah, so some people really love it. I So here's my biggest problem with vertical tabs and Edge. It takes up more screen real estate. If you put them over there, like you lose that left side. When they're in the tabs at the top, they're in the whatever, the window chrome, as they call it. So it takes up more screen real estate. It's not for me. I'm sure there's some people who love it, but.
Well, if you have one of these like 7-acre monitors and the ridiculous width, it's probably okay. Because like if you think about the wide monitors, it's probably fine there. But you're right. The vertical, it doesn't give you any vertical back.
No, it doesn't. Like that's the thing is like if it would have given that screen real estate up top, I'd be like, all right, maybe that's a reason. But then whatever, here we are. Other thing too, Rick, you wrote a wonderful post about how to search Azure services by region. It was actually just published at, I believe this morning is when that's scheduled to go out. Yeah, it
yes,
did go out.
It's out now. And yeah, that was actually kind of a funny story. I fell into this one. So
those are the perfect posts though.
Yeah, because I actually got in a little bit of a trap, you know. So I mentioned that V11 now supports the archive storages, so mm-hmm. like Azure Archive. And I was like, I had a matter with some people in South Africa, and we're talking about this and that, and they're like, it's not available there. I'm like, well, there's pricing for it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what? So maybe that means roadmap. I don't know. But I found a scenario in a couple places where the net of it all is all regions are not created equal.
Right.
And we know that, right? There's mm-hmm. the government and the, you know, property where your data sits side of it. But the best example are some of the more advanced services. Like, so I'm looking at it now. Like there's some services that just aren't available everywhere. Mm-hmm. But then base services like blobs, those are available everywhere. Okay. So, yep. you know, hot and cool blobs. But archive Azure storage is not. Now, the real mystery is what is archive? Is it tape? Is it powered mm-hmm. off disk? What is the actual technology? It's the great mystery that no one will ever know. But I looked, and while they established pricing in this one region for Azure archive storage, it actually isn't available. So, you know, the little checky boxy situation is part of the story. And you see that a lot with like just VMs, for example, like, you know, different generations of servers and GPUs and stuff kind of predicate that the different geometries will say this is or is not available in this region. But if you're thinking about something that uses multiple services or levels of that service, like in my example, it was Azure Archive, you want to make sure that you select a region that kind of goes full. Now, I use a lot of North Central US and Central US. Mm-hmm. And everything I need to do, I can do there.
Yeah.
But when I had this one matter when I was talking to clients in Africa, South Africa, you know, it's great that there's now full service in region, because
sure.
that's a big deal for that part of the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done a lot of work. I've visited South Africa probably four times in my Veeam career so far, and can't wait to go back. Right. I don't have many decorations in my home office, mm-hmm. but what I do have, I got it in South Africa. But anyways, so always just look carefully, right? Because that isn't necessarily the best practice here is that you might know what you need now, but what are you going to need next, right? So once you start saying yes to a region, right? So sometimes things like latency predicate, oh, let's do that region or whatever. But then if I'm planning on these other services, you kind of think about all those other things. So just, I rambled on a bit, but it's kind of important to pick a region that has the services you need, and you can find some kind of exceptions. And the real thing that matters, you go into the Azure portal and you try to click, can't do it, you know? So you'll find out the hard way, but you can find out the soft way ahead of time.
It's good to know. That's, I love those types of posts, because I did the same thing before I went on vacation. I was like, there's gotta be a way to set an away message in Teams. And just so happens, like 3 days before Microsoft launched that feature, I'm like, I'm going to write this up because I needed to know how to do this. And that it's just like, just sort of falls into your lap. So
yeah. And it's one of those things that, you know, the moment I do it twice, I need to put it on the Petri site as a blog. That's my test. You know,
yeah. So. Yeah. And those posts typically do really, really well. Long tail.
Well, awesome it's stuff. Not like I'm a professional writer or anything.
Oh, I think you are, Rick. I think you are a published author with many tens of thousands of page views at this point, at least on Petri, in your career.
You know, it's weird. I was thinking about the first post I ever wrote was actually 20 years ago this month, I believe. So the first commercial, like, blog, as we would call it now. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Long road, small world.
So I have my first ever blog post. Where is it saved? Because I look at it every once in a while for the hilarity of it. So 2006, the first blog post I have ever wrote on the internet.com was that Toshiba introduces a 2.5-inch 200 gigabyte hard drive.
200 gig?
200 gig.
Wow. I was playing with a 16 terabyte SSD last week. Or maybe it was 8 terabyte.
And
mine was actually January 29th, 2001. So it was this quarter. Used NAS as an alternative to a CD-ROM server. Remember those?
Wow.
Huh. Oh, I even wrote my own graphics. That's horrible.
Those are the best. Ugly. Those are the best. Well, Rick, we very much appreciate you taking time away from the MVP Summit. I know that's always a very important event. And to everybody else who tuned in today, make sure check out the links in the description. I guess could be above or below or whatever you're watching this thing. If you've got vertical tabs, maybe they're over there. I don't know. Check out all the links. Follow Rick and I on Twitter. Have yourselves a wonderful day, and we'll catch all of you right back here next time.